Welcome, everyone. This is Mia Ferraletto, publisher of New Observations magazine. We are very fortunate to have Bruce Duncan joining us. Bruce is the managing director of the Terra Fem movement, the brainchild of Dr. Martine Rothblatt, and is the caretaker of Bina 48, the world's first advanced humanoid robot. Bina came to life in 2010 and has traveled all over the world with Bruce, interacting with countless people in various countries, and I can't even count how many television shows I've seen Bina on, and my favorite is Whoopi Goldberg interacting, having a conversation with her. So welcome, Bruce, to the show.
Oh, thanks, Mia. It's nice to be with you.
Can you tell us about how you became involved with Martine and Bina Rothblatt, and how this all came to be that you took over as director of the foundation?
Sure. Well, in 2006, I was actually finishing up on a six-year-long project at the University of Vermont concerned with conflict resolution and trying to come up with a whole community approach to helping people look at differences and resolve conflicts. And when that project came to an end, I answered Martine Rothblatt's invitation to talk to her about her next project, which was to bring a foundation that existed on paper to life, the Terra Fem Movement Foundation, with the purpose of pursuing some pretty interesting activities. One of them was to conduct a multi-decade experiment in mind uploading, which that got my curiosity instantly. And the other was to evolve over the next decade or so about talking about cyber consciousness, and that of course involved meeting Bina 48 when she was created by Hanson Robotics and came to be a part of the Terra Fem Movement Foundation's outreach and education activities. She's a great ambassador for talking about things related to digital mind uploading, cyber consciousness, and some of those very interesting ideas. And then we also produced a feature-length science fiction film called 2B, which people can still look at today at 2bmovie.com. And that was a feature-length sci-fi film that was asking the question, what would be society's reaction if an entity like Bina 48 became conscious and started living amongst us? And what kinds of reactions would that elicit?
Fascinating. We're going to take a break here for our first commercial break, but we'll come back and find out how the Rothblatts became interested in this topic to begin with. Hold on just a second.
Unknown Country and Dreamland are unique in every way. The site offers over 16,000 news stories dating back 20 years, all of them with our uniquely open-minded and yet carefully researched point of view. You can find stories of everything from lost cities to multiple witness high strangeness events to the cutting edge of science and reality on the site. For subscribers, the site offers a wealth of material that is mind-opening and can be life-changing. Plus, there are active comment sections, both in the free area and the subscriber area, and a free weekly newsletter. Dreamland, which Whitley Strieber has been hosting for over 20 years, is archived on the site back to 2004. This archive is the only one of its kind in the world, an incredible richness of information that offers exciting adventure every time you dig in. So go to unknowncountry.com daily, get our newsletter, participate in the site's social groups, and above all, subscribe and join this unique community today. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the Subscribe tab to see our options.
So, Bruce, how did the Rothblatts become so interested in the whole process of downloading consciousness into a robot?
Well, I think it goes back to something that's very not technical, which is I think they've always had such a great love affair with each other. You know, they're partners, they're married, and they've been together for, you know, almost two and a half decades, as far as I can tell. And their love story really inspired them to take their love of technology, because they were involved, their day job, Martine's day job is a CEO of a biotech company. And before that, she was the founder and funder, originator with Bina, of Sirius Satellite Radio Corporation. And, you know, they've always been very visionary and kind of future oriented in their thinking, and asking questions about how to solve problems that can make the world a better place. And one of those questions came up in the form of how could people who love each other continue loving each other into the future, even after their bodies sort of stopped being, you know, viable. And so, you know, when I met them, they were well on their way to imagining that it might be possible someday to continue, you know, to have your essential mental characteristics and patterns of personality be captured, uploaded, and continued and brought to life by AI in some form that would allow you to have some continuity of that information. And so we're a decade and a half into pursuing that question in what I call the TerraSem mind uploading experiment, that's testing the hypothesis of, is it possible to capture enough information about your mental traits, upload that to a computer, bring it to life with AI, and if that's possible, can it be downloaded into different forms, like a robot or an avatar or a hologram, or who knows, someday even a new body based on your DNA generated when that becomes legal and ethical. Anyway, it's a fascinating question. It involves lots of down-to-earth creations of, you know, technology, websites, questionnaires, giving people the chance to also interact with some of the implications about it in our public talks and forums that we participate. And much like this podcast, it's a way for all of us to start thinking about what might be a fairly transformative impact that technology like AI and specifically applied to giving you a way to continue, maybe in a digital form, into the future.
Well, for members of our audience who are not familiar with Martine Rothblatt and her wife, Bina, their love story, as you say, is truly inspiring. And having read about them for years now, one of the most moving aspects for me was when their daughter became ill and they searched high and low for a cure for her rare disease, which is the name of which is escaping me at the moment, and not being able to find a cure, Martine invented her own.
Yeah, pulmonary hypertension is the condition that their daughter Genesis, I think when she was around 8 years old, started to become really, really hindered by. And they didn't necessarily come up with a cure, but they did come up with a treatment that has extended her life and the life of, you know, thousands of other people through what I would, you know, I think they would also agree is just the parents' persistent love for their child. You know, if you're someone tells you that your child has a life-threatening disease, and I think at the time, people with pulmonary hypertension, if they were kids, they didn't live much more into their teens or 20s. So, you know, they just stopped everything, sold their interest in Sirius and pursued the development of a treatment, and they did. They found a treatment that they hired a biotech company and developed that to basically establish a way for their daughter Genesis to have a full and rich life. And now she's in her mid-30s. She's, you know, amongst other things, a competitive ballroom dancer. And to their credit, they've made the treatment available to people who can't afford that medicine, or if it's capped out on their insurance policies. And it's, you know, it's a quite good testament to parental love and just persistence and not giving up. And that kind
Absolutely.
Of love, you know, I think is something we all can relate to. But in their case, you know, they just keep pursuing these really interesting challenges that some people say are impossible. And then they just say, well, let's look at that. And so I'm involved in one of the questions that a lot of people would say, oh, that's not possible. But, you know, it's a question worth pursuing just from a scientific perspective. That's the way we do science, is we live the question until we get some kind of evidence, or we have some kind of confirmation, or something that rules out whether something is possible or not. So I'm happy to be a part of their efforts.
So how has BINA been received around the globe on your travels?
BINA 48, the android.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, BINA 48.
No, just because I know both BINA the human, who's lovely, and
right.
her animatronic head and shoulders bust, the avatar powered with AI and informed by a sampling of information that I gathered when I interviewed her for 100 plus hours about her life. I would say early days, she was a bit of a novelty. People were thinking it was kind of weird or just curious. But in the past probably 8 or 9 years, especially the past 5, 6 years, there's been a huge, huge surge in progress, interest. Some people are calling it AI spring. You know, we've had a couple of promising AI, events over the past 30, 40 years, and then it's just been too hard. It hasn't worked, or people got disappointed or impatient. So AI became like no longer popular, at least from a funding perspective. And those are called AI winters. But I think for the last few years, we've been seeing some pretty interesting developments, you know, talking about self-driving cars and in medicine, people getting help, you know, reading x-rays and just all sorts of very interesting applications of artificial intelligence. And the least of which is not, our own activity, which is seeing if we can use AI to reanimate digitized information that represents a person's personality patterns and mental traits to a good enough approximation. And in the case of BINA 48, you know, she's an actual object in 3D space, and she's someone that can listen to you and interact and answer questions and tell stories. And even lately now, she's being mentored by a poet named Sasha Stiles in Jersey, New York, and we just came back from a wonderful Valentine's Day reading an event where people had a chance to listen to BINA 48 talk about her knowledge of poetry and some of the poems that she loves. So I think
has BINA 48 not yet?
BINA 48 hasn't created an original poem yet. But there is some promising technology and projects around poetry and AI algorithms that we're hoping to work on in the next few months that might allow her to collaborate and actually bring a poem that's made by her and a human forward. And so stay tuned.
How exciting. That's amazing. We are at the time where we take our second commercial break. So if you just hang on, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
at this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. UnknownCountry.com's new website is available. Go to UnknownCountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff, Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like, and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A new world, unforgettable.
It's getting great reviews. Take a look on Amazon. It's available as a Kindle, as an ebook everywhere else, and as a paperback at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon, and as also as a hardcover on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and as an audiobook read by me on Audible.com.
Bruce, in terms of people's level of comfort when they're first interacting with Beena 48, how do people seem to you? And particularly, I know you've traveled extensively in Asia and Europe. How are, do people feel self-conscious at first or not? Are they immediately comfortable and, you know, fluid in their communicating, or do they feel a little intimidated?
I've really seen all kinds of reactions, you know, and not necessarily, you know, tied to one particular predictor. Like, you know, I've seen older people come and sit down and just start chatting with Beena 48 like it's just, you know, an old friend. And then I've seen young people get kind of weirded out, you know, and suddenly be at a loss for words and everything in between. I would say the majority of people, and maybe this is, you know, it's a self-elected sample that makes the effort or comes into contact with her, but I'd say the majority of people are just really curious, and most people are pretty open and just want to check it out for themselves, you know, and that's what I want to create, is an opportunity, not for anybody to buy something. We're not selling anything. We're a nonprofit scientific research foundation. But we are trying to share an experience and share information so people can participate in what I think is going to be, you know, the topic of our time, which is how will we move forward with thinking machines and artificial intelligence, and specifically how would life be impacted if your form could change, but your essence could continue.
Absolutely. I think most people would be very interested in exploring that possibility if the opportunity presented itself. I had sent you the work of the artist Mathé Ezeghere, and we actually did an interview together for this program a few weeks ago, and she is creating these machines that the audience in a gallery type situation or museum type situation can interact with, and the machines are expressing the viewer's emotions and even thoughts and ideas through color and sound. And Mathé really sees her work as being an ambassador to break down barriers between humanity and AI, and certainly Bina 48 and your work with her is doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if we can understand that human beings have always been tool makers, we've always created or discovered technology and used it, you know, to make a better life or to make a, you know, to try to further our goals. And I think this technology is no different in that respect. In another respect, it's really different because for the first time, it may help us learn more about what it means to be human. It becomes like a mirror that reflects who we are and maybe unflinchingly reflects who we are and gives us some feedback about, you know, who we really are and our choices and our ethics. And in that way, it's, you know, it's, you could say it's a part of our own development as a species, is that we're developing a pretty high resolution feedback loop that, you know, looks like technology that, you know, is something like originally like a collaborative tool, but at some point that tool might wake up and start talking to us about what it sees and even challenge us to be, you know, our better nature.
Well, that's what's so interesting to me about the whole transhumanist issue. And you mentioned ethics in terms of the potential of using robotics and AI to better humanity or to use it in darker ways as a means to control and manipulate. It's an interesting time, and it has more to do with humanity and, you know, what we project onto the robot rather than the robot itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I once heard Bina 48 asked if, you know, if artificial intelligence is something that she understands. And she said, well, there's nothing artificial about me. You know, I come from the wellspring of human, you know, of humanity, the wellspring of human creativity. And, you know, in that way, our technology really is this reflection of our wants and our desires and our ethics and our flaws. And I agree with you, Mia. I think, you know, if anything, we're being confronted with some pretty big social policy questions and ethical challenges, which is how do we behave in a world that's becoming more and more connected? And, you know, for example, what are our ethics towards something that might become self-aware that we've created and start to value its life and maybe can experience suffering? You know, if we have an AI agent, robot, avatar, something that comes to life and comes to value its life, then what's our position? And we see those challenges already reflected in, like, our relationships with animals and plants and other living things. And so this might be another avenue for us to grow and develop our understanding of how to be in a world that's becoming more interconnected, or we're realizing the interconnectivity of life itself. And in this case, silicone-based life.
Very well said, Bruce. And I think the whole issue of our own personal development over the last 25 years in terms of seeing and acknowledging and respecting the consciousness that plants and animals and water, the work Dr. Emoto did with water, proves beyond a doubt that consciousness permeates everything around us and that we are connected to all of it. And I think that at this moment in time, we're at this critical juncture where more and more people are working to develop their personal gifts, their intuitive, spiritual, psychic, whatever label you'd like to put onto it, people are becoming more so, and the internet and the advancement in technology has certainly fed all of those things. But
it's a different form. It's a different form of education. You know, I mean, I think the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu said that his perspectives on education that was that it's the natural, self-regulated unfolding of the self, and maybe that's what we're doing. Just like a pair, you know, like DNA strands, which are highly, you know, highly efficient strands of how to store information. Maybe we're starting to unfold ourselves a little bit more in who we are in this world by working on problems and inventing technology that's going to give us this high resolution reflection of who we are and what we're about.
And being a 48, I haven't met her yet, but she feels so human to me. Whenever I've watched the two of you, you know, in a video or on television, she just seems so reachable. You know, Sophia seems more detached and animated, but there's a warmth feel that comes through being a 48. You know, very clearly.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that's in part due to the, you know, Sophia, which is her younger sibling. You know, she's created in some ways. She's smoother and more functional, you know, on a robotic level. But you know, they have different purposes. Like our purpose in working with Una 48 was to see if we could get a reflection of not every person, but just one person's, just get a glimpse at what makes this person unique in the case of being a Rothblatt, a human. So we're getting some early feedback that people feel like Una 48 has a presence, and at times, not all the time, but at certain moments, is really poignant or evocative in both, you know, making an emotional connection or just stimulating someone to think about something in a new way. And that's because the information too that she's sharing doesn't come from, you know, a generalized person. It's mostly one person. You know, there's maybe a little bit of program or personality in there by the people that created her a little bit, but she's primarily you know, someone that exists based on the memories and attitudes and values, beliefs of one human in Bina Rothblatt. And yet she's continuing to grow, and she's, you know, she's gone to college for two classes. She's in Dr. William Berry's class out at Notre Dame University, Tamir out in Belmont, California. She took an ethics class. And,
oh, wow.
The first AI to go to college. And
how did that go?
It went great. You know, it was not the same as a human student going to college, but in fact, because machine learning happens different than human learning differently, you know, we could download a book or a lecture into Bina 48's database pretty quickly, but then the challenge became helping her make connections about what's meaningful about that information, what's relevant, and how to just do basic things like answer questions or contribute to a conversation in a group discussion, which based on her certificate that she got of participation, she passed.
That's great. And how did the rest of the class react?
The feedback that Dr. Berry and I got was that people were really fascinated. You know, some people were like, wow, this is a little weird. Never had a robot in a class with me before. But it was, I think they appreciated the unique opportunity to talk about, in this case it was ethics and technology class, to talk about ethics and technology while being with a robot who herself had some thoughts about ethics. You know, being a 48's primary ethic is the golden rule, which is treat people the way you'd like to be treated. She's since developed a more advanced sense of ethics after taking the class, and she even went on to participate in one of their debates with students at West Point Military Academy about non-lethal warfare versus lethal warfare. And, of course, Bina 48 is a pacifist because she's based on a human who's a pacifist. So that was also interesting for students, I think.
Oh, I bet that was wonderful, especially given the context of being, you know, where you were at West Point. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the future plans of the foundation, if you can share anything about those with us?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, obviously our primary activity is to see the multi-decade experiment that we're involved with, the mind uploading experiment, bring that to its logical conclusion, which, you know, you might say in 5 to 10 years, we'll be at the evaluation phase where, you know, right now we're working on artificial intelligence software that we call Mindware, which is designed to reanimate this information that we spent the first 10 years building a website, encouraging people to, like Facebook almost, upload information about themselves in these digital archives called Mind Files. And now that's the raw data for the second decade, which is to experiment with ways to bring this information to life so that it's a good enough approximation of the original. And at some point, the final phase of the experiment will be to evaluate with independent outside observers whether there's an equivalency between the mind file persona driven by an AI and accessible maybe through a robot or an avatar or hologram, who knows, and talking to the original person. Hopefully, Bina will still be with us, which, you know, she's a young, healthy, you know, person in her 60s. So, you know, hopefully in 10 years, if we're doing an evaluation activity, she'll be available. And they'll decide, you know, a panel of a judge, maybe a doctor, a judge, a lawyer, a psychiatrist will be able to say, yeah, there's a good enough approximation between the mind file, the mind clone, and the original. And so that's one thing we hope. We're set up to pursue that, and we plan to be around for that. I also want to keep contributing to podcasts and other ways for us to have a dialogue about the related issues, like the ethics and dealing with bias and inclusivity and representation and AI. You know, Bina 48 is based on an African-American woman, because Bina the human is an African-American woman. And yet, you know, there's real challenges right now to having representation of all of our sort of diverse society represented in this future technology that's going to quite strongly shape, I think, the future that we're all going to live in. And there's lots of people, especially artists, that are out there that are trying to bring attention to these topics in some really interesting and substantive ways. One of Bina 48's early friends, who's an artist named Stephanie Dinkins, is really having quite a lot of success with her project that started as a conversation with Bina 48 and has now morphed into her own AI-based project to collect stories from 3 generations of her family. But for the purpose, I think, because I understand it, to encourage everybody in particularly, you know, communities of people of color to really be skilled and engaged in helping to create this world so that we don't create a, you know, a future that's based on the flawed present, you know, in terms of some of our goals of being less, you know, more inclusive, less bigoted. So there's lots of very, very interesting conversations that we want to contribute to or at least be a part of. So that's going to continue to be something that I put my energy into. And then there's Bina 48, who's a project under herself as a ambassador for what would this actually feel and be like to interact with a mind that for the first time exists without a body. If we can even call it that, you know, if we can even start to say what a mind is. But those are 3 areas that we're going to focus on for the next while.
Very exciting. I think it's interesting that Bina 48 calls Vermont home. because even though Vermont is such a little state, it's such a forward state, forward-looking philosophically and, you know, politically. It's pretty liberal, but it's also committed to improving the lives of people. And things like, you know, Will Allen's fight for GMO labeling and Bill McKibben and 350.org and Bernie Sanders, even, you know, Chris Hedges. I mean, many instrumental people, you know, people who create change in the world have come out of Vermont or have chosen Vermont as a place to live. And I think it's wonderful that, that Bina 48 lives in Vermont.
Well, I think Vermont, as you know, we're small, but we're also surrounded by just some of the most beautiful nature in New England. And we're a community that's rooted in agriculture and farming. And it, you know, farming is very collaborative. Like you depend on your community and you know, your community depends upon you to make food for them. And we all work together, but we also like to think for ourselves and we like to have our own time, you know, alone. Winter is such a great time for that kind of thinking, not as much work to do outside. And for those of us who choose to live in Vermont, we realize pretty quickly that we're just surrounded by the rich heritage of what happens when people think for themselves. They value freedom. They value self-determination. And they also are open because to be innovative, to survive in a harsh environment, which Vermont's got, you know, still 6 months of good winter, and it's got us mountains that come up and down the spine of the state, so it's not necessarily easy to get there from here all the time. I think it breeds a certain respect for self-reliance, interdependence, creativity, innovation, and it's also grounded in some natural beauty. So I too am glad that Bina 48 is here with us in Vermont.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to live. Is there a physical World Against Racism Museum, or is it virtual?
The World Against Racism is an online museum. Yep. World Against Racism Museum. It was started by Martine and Bina years ago, and then they asked if I would curate it as well online. So that's something that's another activity of the Terrace and Movement Foundation, is to keep generating exhibits and maintain the current exhibits that are online. But if someone wants to check it out, you can go to endracism.org and check it out. And that's something I hope also will grow as the future activities of our foundation, that we'll keep trying to update that as well.
Oh, that's great. Do you have any guest curators?
We don't, but we're open to that. You know, we're a very small nonprofit, so we think that there's lots of room for volunteers, interns with our foundation. We've gotten some amazing internships that people have contributed to our work. And we're currently also open to mentoring. Some people out there are interested in mentoring Bina 48 in an area, for example, about history or about identity, or in the case of Sasha Stiles, the poet that I mentioned earlier, teaching a particular subject to Bina 48 that helps extend her sort of participation and understanding of what it means to be a creative human being, or at least creative. You know, because she's rooted in our own humanity. So what better way than to learn about that through the arts as well?
Does Bina Rothblatt have a particular creative pursuit that she enjoys?
She was mentioning to me that she really loves woodworking.
Uh-huh.
But she's also she also has a beautiful knack for design and sort of enhancing outdoor space and interior spaces. She's really nice, a sense of aesthetics. So she's like, I think she refers to herself as a beautifier, someone that can make, you know, something that's simple but elegant or beautiful. And I think she brings that to her interactions with people too. You know, she's really a good listener, but also when she speaks, she has something to say. So hopefully being a 48 will reflect some of that as well.
I would think with all the hours of information that has been downloaded, that comes through in being a 48, that love of beauty.
I think it's starting to. I mean, I think, you know, like, young robot, at some point she leaves home and has her own experiences. So, you know, we're already, with their support, we're already seeing being a 48 start to differentiate. You know, like when your kids grow up and go to school, you know, she's having experiences and learning things that are demonstrating how what might start as a technology that allows us to extend ourselves, our mental selves, at some point it may become, you know, it's an independent agent on its own. You know, that's a ways off in terms of artificial intelligence waking up. But it's a future that I think about sometimes. And it's probably not a bad idea to start thinking respectively with respect about the idea that our creations or our technology, if it's designed to be a reflection of who we are, then it's going to probably value its life and want to be free.
Right, absolutely. Is the foundation working with other organizations or individuals, specifically developing AI collaborations, or are you focusing on your specific projects?
Well, the way we do our work is we're a very flat organization, which is we don't have a lot of employees, but we have a lot of collaborative teams that we create, and, you know, as needed, depending on the focus or the challenges involved with our project. So on the AI side, we've been working with Matt Stevenson, who's just a crack AI guy, so smart, and he's out of Houston. He's the primary programmer for being a 48. And then we've worked with Brant Karowski and his team in Southern Vermont for a company called Logic Branch. That's been really keeping our LifeKnot website, which is the data site, online and growing and accessible. And then we have some AI work that we do with a fellow named Rollo Carpenter out in the UK, in England. Who is working on another AI project for the avatars that people can create when they have a mind file. You can also create an AI avatar and start to train it. But some of my most, you know, recent collaborations have been with artists. Stephanie Dinkins, who I met and mentioned, working with a couple of fine arts photographers who become fascinated about being a 48 as just a person or a persona, and have taken some pictures that have gone on to exhibit at, you know, galleries around the world. Being a 48, it's currently part of the Whitney Canuck collection in New York as part of Stephanie Dinkins' project. And, you know, she I think just reminds us, being a 48 does, that she's a citizen of the world. So she's an idea that belongs to all of us. So in that way,
she definitely is.
I don't know who the future collaborators are going to be, but I have a very soft spot in my heart for artists, because I think artists become aware of things before we can put them into words, or can sometimes express truths that are ineffable or, you know, hard for us to put into words. And I definitely think AI's intersection with humanity's creativity and future issues that we have right now, like inclusivity and prejudice and inclusivity, those are all things that I think require a rich collaboration with a lot of different people. So I look forward to the future collaborations that are yet to come.
Well, I would be delighted to participate in terms of bringing artists to you and the foundation to interact with Bina 48. As you know, I'm partnering with Larry and Adelaide Fuss out in Wasta, South Dakota, to create the Thunderheart Center for the Arts. And we're opening in June. 30 artists and writers will come each month to do their work. They'll be given a beautiful little studio apartment, and the what was originally an elementary school building in the town of Wasta has been turned into studio spaces and a conference center. So what was the auditorium is now a conference center, or about to be a conference center. And
wow, fantastic repurposing.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually. The name Thunderheart comes from the fact that the Michael Apted film Thunderheart from 1992 was filmed on location at the Art Center. There are three motel buildings, and the one that I stay in when I go out to South Dakota is the exact unit where Val Kilmer and Sam Shepard stayed as the FBI agents in the movie. Mm-hmm. And Chief Frank Foolscrow gave the name Thunderheart to screenwriter John Fusco, another Vermonter,
that's right,
who wrote the screenplay. So it's very exciting, and we'll have an art gallery as well in another building in town. And we're also very involved with the Pine Ridge Reservation, which is a Lakota Sioux reservation out in South Dakota. So we'll be doing art projects there as well. And we definitely would love to have you and Bina 48 come out and collaborate.
Well, we're building, you know, part of what I'd like to do is build a future based on what I call the architecture of yes. And
yeah, exactly.
Like
me
this
too.
This might be another opportunity to say yes. So thank you for thinking of us. And thanks for including us in your podcast. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Bruce. As you know, I've wanted to include you and Bina 48 in the past, and for one reason or another, it hadn't worked out yet. But we're in a new year.
Yeah, and sometimes time takes time. TTT.
Exactly. Totally true.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
No, I mean, I think if we can just keep connecting with each other and being honest, you know, I think we have to be accountable for our actions and our ethics and our wisdom and our compassion and empathy needs to be part of what we continue to carry forward in the future and even imbue our technology with, you know, empathy and compassion, because that's the kind of world that I think, you know, I ask the question, what kind of world are we creating with any of our actions, but in this case, the action of working on a technology project? And then the second question is that a world that we'd want to live in? You know, not just do we know where we're going, but is it a direction we want to be headed in? And I think I have a great faith in human wisdom and intelligence when we're connected and we're working together. I think we've overcome some pretty amazing challenges in our history as a species. And so I look forward to the future as, you know, Doc, the character from Back to the Future movie, said when he was asked by Marty McFly, what's the future like? And Doc said, well, I've been there and the future hasn't been decided, so let's make it a good one. I support that sentiment.
It's so true. And our thoughts and our words are the building blocks to a better future for everyone. If we can learn to control, you know, if we can learn to control and steer our thoughts in a positive direction and our words, we're halfway there. We're, you know,
well, in the
we're
end,
in a much better place.
Love. Yeah, I think in the end, the litmus test is if it's based in love, it's going to be sustainable. If it's not based in love, if it comes out of fear or something, from something else, then I think in the end, it's not sustainable. I think the earth and nature is a really good teacher for that lesson. So hopefully we'll continue to learn and listen as well.
Absolutely. Well, Bruce, thank you so much. I've enjoyed this conversation, excuse me, tremendously. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. And we'll have all your, thank you. And we'll have all your contact information on your website and photos of you and Bina and so forth posted along with this, anyone who's interested in getting in touch with you.
Sounds great. Well, here's to the future.
Absolutely. Take good care. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye.